Welcome to King's Health Partners Haematology Podcast Series called KHP Heme Pearls. I'm Dr. Dipti Radia, Haematology Consultant at Guy's and St. Thomas's Hospital, and I'm delighted to be here again. Today's podcast will focus on high haemoglobins. I'm glad to introduce Dr. Mansoor Cisse, who's a consultant haematologist at King's College Hospital, and we'll be talking through some of the common queries that primary care colleagues have around high haemoglobins. So thank you for joining me today, Mansoor, and I'll go straight on with our first question. So Mansoor, what is the risk of having a high haemoglobin for a patient? Why are we worried?
So thank you very much, Dipti, for this invitation and having this chat, blood clot formation. So in simple terms, you make the blood thicker with higher haemoglobin. The higher the haemoglobin is, the thicker the blood is, the more likely that you're going to end up with a blood clot, which can either be in the veins, or it can be in the heart, or it can be in the arterial areas as well. So that's the main risk. But of course, we'll come to this. We have to be careful how we define how high that haemoglobin is and how relevant it is in the first place.
Yes, so I guess that takes us on to that second question. Are there any parameters within the full blood count that can help identify patients who have a higher risk of developing clots, as you've said? Are there any particular parameters that we need to look out for?
Yes, so haemoglobin is an easy parameter to measure. But a more accurate way of measuring blood viscosity or the risk of blood clots, thrombosis, is actually the hematocrit. So the hematocrit is something that goes with the haemoglobin and is a more accurate marker of the viscosity of blood. So we look at the hematocrit as the main thing in terms of working out the risk of how high is this haemoglobin and how low it is, churn out a whole host of other things. Your MCV is the volume of your cells and other things. But the main thing really we look in the parameter is actually the hematocrit. That's the main thing.
I guess just to say, Mansoor, the hematocrit also we put down as PCV, the packed cell volume.
That's
so
true.
In disease, you will get the HB and then the HCT or PCV.
Yes,
and it's
indeed.
The same thing when we're talking about, you know, venous setting or treating these patients.
Yes.
So are there any particular parameters, you know, how high should a hematocrit be before people start worrying?
So the hematocrit, as we measure it, to some extent, it depends on different labs have slightly different sort of machines they use for analysis, and they also have slightly different ranges. Within KHP, there is this harmonization program where we're harmonizing our machines so that you take away that sort of variable, and we will be having an agreed that we'll be using across the patch. Essentially, for female patients, hematocrit persistently above 0.48 or PCV more than 48%. For men, persistently above 0.52 or 52%. Would be something that counts as high hemoglobin or high hematocrit. And that would be the thing that would trigger the initial referral to investigate why does this particular patient have high hematocrit or hemoglobin.
And the parameters are great, but I think one of the words I'll pick up on is persistent, because you can have, depending on the causes which we'll go on to, you can have a high one, but you need to repeat the bloods and look at the patient. And those investigations can take place in primary or secondary care. So moving on from there, if a patient has had a high hematocrit, you would recommend start investigating again a few months later or looking at the patient. What are the common causes of a high hemoglobin and a high hematocrit?
Yes. So just to reiterate that point, it's not a single hemoglobin reading or hematocrit reading that makes one worried. It has to be persistent over time to be able to sort of say, yes, I'm not talking about someone who has, you know, hematocrit of 0.6 or 60%, for instance. Those are extreme ends, but most of the time it's not that high. And therefore, you want to make sure you repeat it. And one of the common things would be dehydration. So patients who may be dehydrated, for instance, may have a high hemoglobin as a result of the differential concentration of the plasma level being lower, and therefore that increases the concentration and you end up with higher hematocrit than normal. So you have to make sure that patient is fully hydrated. They may also have other secondary things that may naturally go with high hemoglobin. So if, for instance, they have any respiratory disease, chronic respiratory diseases, for instance, so smokers in particular, COPDs, and, you know, any other chronic respiratory disease can give rise to that. Or, you know, cardiac diseases where you have a problem with right to left shunt, which actually would give you high hemoglobin, which is actually compensatory because the body actually needs that to be able to function in that sort of way. So you have to rule those ones out. So generally, from primary care point of view, the concern to secondary care, to refer to secondary care, is you would have to look at all these parameters. This patient is fully hydrated and it's done more than once and is persistent. They don't have a primary respiratory disease that will drive high hemoglobin. They are not chronic smokers, may or may not be associated with high hemoglobin, and alcohol misuse as well. So those are things as a basic parameter you would need to set right. And also you want to look at the drugs that they actually take. So drug courses are also important because in particular, the diuretics have the potential to make the patient dehydrated and that can lead to spuriously high hemoglobin or hematocrit.
Yes, and it comes to mind that a lot of people use androgens. So, it's not always males because that would be wrong, but a lot of people use androgens or testosterone or EPO stimulating agents. And so it's really making sure, you're absolutely right, getting a really good thorough drug history, but not just prescribed medications, but over-the-counter medications that may drive it. So I guess the next thing is there's lots of secondary causes. We kind of know them as hematologists. People in the community should know them. But at which point should they say, okay, it needs to get, because not all high hemoglobins need to come to a hematologist. In your mind, in your mind's eye, what are the parameters that would say, please refer on to us as hematologists?
So once you, I think the key thing is once you have ruled out, reasonable secondary causes that, as we already mentioned, and the hematocrit or the hemoglobin is persistently raised, and more importantly, especially if it is progressively getting worse, I think that would be something that you would ring alarm bells. But you also have to look at the patient in totality, because what you are interested in is actually the key driver here, or the key thing that you clinically concerns you, is the risk of thrombosis. So if that patient has other risk of thrombosis, they have other cardiovascular risk factors, for instance, those are things that would make you be more concerned. So patients who may have, diabetes or hypertension or other cardiovascular risk factors are all things that would make you, that risk profile. And this is sort of patients who I should refer to hematology earlier rather than later. And I just take you back to the point of you mentioned about the androgens. Yes, the drugs are important, but you're absolutely right. Some of this, especially common in young men, but, they like to go to the gym and they use things to make them look even heftier than normal. Can have other things that they use. And for those sort of patients, I think the important thing is actually to warn them about the risk of continuing with those ones, especially if they're not medically indicated. Having said that, there are some patients who are on androgens as a result of having a requirement for androgens.
So I guess the thing is, there will be secondary causes. I would anticipate getting a complete history in primary care, maybe even doing a chest x-ray following through on secondary causes. And I guess the other thing is thresholds, for primary, it's always a worry that's a primary cause, an MPN, and we're not going to talk about that here, that there would be a venous section threshold and further investigations. And for those people with secondary causes, there's a threshold where they may need venous sections, and that would be 0.55, mm-hmm. So persistently above that. And I guess the last thing is that, when a GP is referring somebody for a high hemoglobin, they come to a hematology department, what should the GP actually tell them to expect? Because they're petrified.
Well, I suppose most of the time, I think hematology, oncology, cancer, those are things that ring in people's ears. And I think different letters sometimes may go to patients. I think it's reasonable to sort of say to them that you are referring them to rule out form of blood cancer. It may be that this is a low-level blood cancer, if that is an appropriate discussion at that stage. Although in some cases that may not necessarily be appropriate because it terrifies patients. But in layman's terms, just explaining to them that you want to just make sure that they don't have a condition where the bone marrow produces too many red blood cells, i.e. they become too red in that sort of sense. And the hematologist, once you go there, would explain to you what investigation they're going to do. And once they have made a diagnosis, they can explain to you exactly what that diagnosis is, rather than having to actually introduce that word right from the word go. This is a blood cancer, because in some cases, depending on the referral pattern, you may find that the majority of your patients who may be referred would not necessarily have an MPN. They may have secondary causes, in which case carrying them off in the first instance may not be a good idea.
Yeah, and I guess where I come from, exactly you, is, you know, it's highly unlikely it's primary. The most common is secondary. That's what's being investigated because your hemoglobin's too high and we just need to know what the cause is to try and manage it because, you know, it's going to be so variable. I think we could do another session on MPNs and following it through for the podcasts. So it always goes by really quickly, but I think knowing what the common causes and the secondary causes is really important, having some of that carried out in primary care and then having a discussion, even prior to referral, using our advice and guidance is often useful as well for patients and clinicians. So it may be time to wrap up this particular very quick podcast. So thank you, Mansur, for joining us and to our audience for listening. We hope you've learned something along the way with this. Please spread the word with your colleagues by sharing the podcast. We'd really appreciate it if you would leave a review and let us know if there are any topics you'd like us to focus on for any future podcasts. And we're very much looking forward to developing this KHP Heme Pearl series with your input. So please let us know if you'd like us to involve in any future episodes. You'd be more than welcome. Thank you.